From Radio Vermont, it's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV. It's your show about the people, places, and the issues that matter the most to you. Now here's your host, Dave Graham.
Good morning, Vermont. It is Monday, April the 15th. This is tax day in most of the country, although we have a little reprieve here in New England. We don't.
We're due today.
Maine,
New Hampshire, and Massachusetts get the one-day reprieve for the Patriots Day holiday, but not in Vermont. Not anymore.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm going to have a busy afternoon then.
Do it midnight.
Oh.
Well, we're going to let you off an hour early today so you can get a start on
that. No, I'm only kidding. I already got my taxes done. When did this change? I thought we were going to be
Assuming a lot here leading up to tax day, and then we got the official word. It's not in Vermont.
Not in Vermont. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, well. Sorry, folks.
I think what that is, nobody had a say in that, did we?
No.
I think they call that taxation without representation.
Well, we can call it that.
Yeah, so. Well, anyway, April 15th is tax day, apparently. It's also Patriots Day in Massachusetts. That used to give us an extension here in Vermont when...
It did.
When the...
Sometimes for 2 days.
Yeah. Sometimes for 2 days. And, of course, the Boston Marathon's going on. The Red Sox are playing early. This is their morning game. I think it's a once-a-year thing they play in the morning. And so the Dave Graham Show is only going to go to 10 today instead of 11. You can get out your hankies now and be all upset about that for a while if you want. And Red Sox baseball, the pregame show, I think, starts at 10, assuming that they aren't rained out, which they might be because it's supposedly being that bad weather in Boston. It's not that stellar weather here. Speaking of weather here, we are worried about flooding in Vermont. I guess flood warnings all over the state. Many, many roads. The ones that usually flood, you can expect this morning, are having problems. So if your road usually floods, you might want to stay home or take an alternate route or something. Anyway, I did want to talk a little bit about this short show we have coming up today. We're going to be talking in the first half hour here with Steve Howard of the Vermont State Employees Association and with Attorney General T.J. Donovan. Interesting change happening at the state's attorney's offices around Vermont. The deputy state's attorneys are just voted to join a union, that union being the Vermont State Employees Association. This effort has been underway for a number of years. Our deputy state's attorneys around Vermont historically have not been very well paid. These people get out of law school with giant student loans often and end up working in jobs that put them in a squeeze, shall we say. And then we, in the latter half hour, we're going to be talking with Diana Moore of Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice about drumming therapy for people who are experiencing grief. We'll get to that in the next half hour. But first, I wanted to welcome Steve Howard. He's in the studio this morning. Thank you for joining me, Steve.
Well, thank you for having me.
And T.J. Donovan, I believe, is on the phone. Good morning, Mr. Attorney General.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Steve.
And wanted to talk a little bit about this unionization drive. This is interesting to me because I remember back in 2013, I was a reporter for the Associated Press, and I wrote a story in which I interviewed Sarah George, who was then a deputy state's attorney in Chittenden County. Of course, she's since gone on to serve as the state's attorney of Chittenden County. And back then, of course, a gentleman by the name of T.J. Donovan was the state's attorney in Chittenden County. And so you and she have worn a couple of different hats. I reached out to Sarah to see if she could be on the program this morning. She is prepping for a huge case that involving the five Harvard students who were killed a couple of years ago, and the driver, Stephen Burgoyne, is charged with five homicides there and very, very serious business. So I cannot blame her for not wanting to come on the radio while she's preparing for that case there. But let me start with you, Steve. Why is this a good idea? What was your argument for the deputy state's attorneys? And there are a couple other work classes too. Who are the other employees who are unionizing here?
So some really important ones. We know this because TJ was my boss. Used to be my boss in the state's attorney's office.
Wow, small world.
He was a great boss.
Small world.
And it's the victim advocates who help our victims and survivors. survivors of crime through the trial and beyond. And it's also, as everybody knows, the admin staff in the state's attorney's office. Those are the men and women who know everything about how to make the office really run on time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so so it's the victim advocates, the admin staff, and the deputy state's attorneys.
That's right.
All becoming regular VSEA employees, or do they have a special unit like the state police have, or how does that work?
They will become members of the VSEA. Mm-hmm. They'll be part of a unit that it's called our smaller. It's a small unit. They'll be joining with some other folks to create a cohesive unit, and we'll be able to begin to advocate on their own behalf. And really, our message to them, and our message that came from them to us, was that they were really tired of being the forgotten stepchild of state government. These are the men and women who play an important part in the front lines of keeping our community safe and putting dangerous people taking dangerous people off the street, supporting victims of crime. And they really were just being left out there, hanging out there on their own. And they needed to join with other state employees to have that kind of power and that kind of support so that they no longer would be just sort of left behind.
Now, union, sort of, I think there's a Latin root there somewhere, probably that is the same as the word uniformity. And to have all these folks in a union implies that they're going to be treated in pretty similar fashion, whether they're working in Bennington or in St. Johnsbury or in Burlington. And mm-hmm. I remember back, in fact, I'm looking at my old story from 2013 here. And in here, I quoted a certain Chittenden County state's attorney by the name of T.J. Donovan, says, who was expressing some misgivings about this and saying, I don't know the values, nor can I impose my values on a different county about pay, about benefits, about time off. He also questioned whether Chittenden County, by far Vermont's largest and holder of its busiest criminal docket, would have enough clout in the executive committee. And TJ, let me ask you, do you continue with these misgivings, or do you feel like that issue of having different counties, deputy state's attorneys and victims advocates, admin staff in the different counties all operating under the same contract, does that really work?
Well, Dave, I always have supported the right to unionize, and I think I was the first state's attorney to support my employees' efforts to unionize because you want to level the playing field. And so, really, congratulations go to Steve Howard and VSEA for the great work they've done. This has been a long road, and to the deputy state's attorneys who voted overwhelmingly. Mm-hmm. And look, the state's attorneys, it's a great department of state government. It's a unique department of state government because you're not technically state employees, but are you county employees? But, of course, there's no county budget.
Yeah.
So you got into these pay disparities. You got into really this kind of limbo area sometimes where, you were trying to get money. You couldn't get money. If you wanted to get somebody a raise, sometimes you had to go to appeal to the executive committee, which, of course, is made up of other state attorneys and now sheriffs. And that's not to criticize the Department of State's attorneys. It's simply to say, to your point, Dave, that sometimes standardizing and bringing uniformity and leveling the playing field and adding in some protections for hardworking Vermonters is a good thing. That's why I've always supported the right to unionize.
Mm-hmm. Steve, let me ask you, is there a sense that some of the deputy state's attorneys will see big pay increases as they are absorbed into a state workforce that has certain pay levels for different steps and et cetera? I mean, is there going to be any big bump for people?
Well, I think the members in this new unit, the victim advocates, the admin staff, and the deputy state's attorneys will determine what proposals they want to bring to the table. Mm-hmm. But for the first time, they'll be equals with their boss, which is really, I think, a critical component. We have some really talented people in these offices across the state. They're doing amazing things. There's deputy state's attorneys in Rutland County with caseloads as many as 400 cases.
Wow.
So you may see some people say, hey, look, we need to have some caseload management here. We can't be asking this of human basic people trying to manage that kind of caseload. We need some just cause protection so that we can't have politics enter into these important offices and have really talented people just be thrown out on the street for political reasons, rather than allowing these professionals to continue in their jobs. But all of the issues that are going to be brought to the table will be determined by the members. They are now going to be members of their union. They will decide their fate. They will decide what they want to bring to the table, and the VSEA staff and the other members of the VSEA will be there to support them.
The VSEA, tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing it already represents staff attorneys in agencies like, you know, the Agency of Natural Resources or the Agency of Commerce and Community Development, whatever other agencies have staff attorneys. And I mean, I'm over-focusing on the deputy state's attorneys, but it seems as though if you are a deputy state's attorney with 10 years experience working in this job, that you would expect that you're automatically going to be at parallel pay-wise and benefit-wise and maybe even pension-wise, et cetera, with your colleagues in those other agencies who have similar experience and the law degree.
Well, there is an attorney pay plan that does exist now in state government. Mm-hmm. We'll be looking at that. But there's a lot of other things. You know, these men and women are called out to go to very gruesome crime scenes. They're often not compensated well for that.
At all hours of the night.
Of the days and night. Yeah. The victim advocates are dealing with really traumatic cases and with children, families and children who have gone through horrific crimes.
Do they go right out there at the initial crime scene too?
They do. And you know, the toughest part is when you're sitting there with somebody who is a survivor of crime. You know, it's traumatic if you're listening to these stories and seeing the human impact of crime. You know, we need to make sure that we build a career path for the folks who are there, and we need to make sure that these folks have the ability to be equals at the bargaining table, to bring together the power they have as employees, who are the folks who play a really important part in keeping our community safe.
I'm just thinking about in terms of sort of this idea of folks being roughly parallel and treated somewhat equally. You know, state police officers, from what I understand, when they go out for a crime, let's say there's a homicide in their coverage area, they got to get out of bed at 3 a.m. and head out to the crime scene. And the deputy state's attorney gets called out too. Mm-hmm. My understanding is in the past, the state police officer is getting, trooper typically is getting overtime, and the deputy state's attorney is getting no bump in pay, right?
Right. I mean, that can be true, and it's really ironic, because the law enforcement officers are often relying on the guidance of the state's attorney in terms of what evidence is important and what they need to see in order to adequately address the situation and to charge people correctly. So we want to make sure that that's taken care of. We want to make sure caseloads are dealt with. There are a whole host of issues that I think the members are going to decide, the admin are going to decide, the victim advocates are going to decide. I think what's really important is that they decided to take things. This is a 7-year fight.
Yeah.
And what's frustrating for labor leaders is that, you know, Vermont, here we are, we're in the land of Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. It takes 7 years to build, to organize 110 people. You know, sometimes we don't live up to our image. We need to make it easier for people to organize. But I think this successful campaign shows other folks who are feeling left behind and forgotten that they can go to the VSEA and to other labor unions in the movement, and they can organize and take things into their own hands.
Attorney General T.J. Donovan, you were about to jump in, it sounded like, especially when I was talking about that disparity between, you know, the pay for the state, overtime pay for the state trooper and not so much for the state's attorney. What about that?
Well, look, you're exactly right, Dave. You know, the police have an incredibly difficult job, and we support, and the Vermont State Police is the best law enforcement agency in the state of Vermont. They're true professionals, and they should be compensated well. You know, as I like to say, when bad things happen and you hear gunfire, when all of us run away, the police run towards the gunfire and protect us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But how this plays out is, as Steve said, look, every night in every county, there is a state's attorney or a deputy state's attorney who is on call.
Right.
You are getting called at all hours of the night. And I just want to share a quick anecdote from this past weekend. Saturday night was the Curtis Hoff Awards dinner at the Hilton for the Democratic Party. I was there. And let me tell you, guys, it was a long dinner. I was walking out. And it was probably 10 o'clock, and there was a deputy state's attorney who I knew, who was over in the corner on the phone, and I could hear her talking about a certain type of crime. And I looked at her, I said, "Are you working?" And she said, "I'm on call."
So wow.
She had left the dinner. She was over in the corner of the hotel room on the phone, probably 10 o'clock at night, talking, I would assume, with the police, trying to figure out what was the most appropriate crime to bring based on the evidence. That happens every night in every county by hardworking deputy state's attorneys. They should be compensated.
And she wasn't getting paid at that moment, right?
You know, you're salaried to a certain degree, as I'm sure most state employees are.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's for going to work at 8 to 4:30. Here's the other thing about being a prosecutor and a victim advocate. Let's be clear about the hard work victim advocates do.
Yep, yep.
You know, this isn't an 8 to 5 job. You get a trial, you're working nights, you're working weekends.
Yeah.
This is not about anybody getting rich. This is just about fair compensation for fair work and for doing the work that Steve said is so important to the vibrancy and the safety of this state. And that's the victim advocates. That's the unsung heroes of the office, the administrative staff, and, of course, the deputies. You know, when I was a deputy, Dave, I used to carry a beeper. We used to carry beepers.
Yeah, yeah. Beepers. They went the way of fax machines, didn't they?
What's that?
Didn't beepers go the way of fax machines?
I think so, but you used to carry a beeper and a special cell phone, and you know it's gotten more efficient, of course, because a lot of the work that you're doing as an on-call deputy at night is you're working with the police to get search warrants.
Yeah,
and you're calling judges, and so a lot of this work happens after hours because crime doesn't just occur between the hours of 8 and 5.
Yeah, we got to talk to the criminals about that. Hey guys,
we got to do something about that.
Yeah. Daylight only, please. No, I mean I shouldn't be a wise guy about this because it's serious business and it is something that I remember interviewing Sarah George when she was in the story I did back in 2013 and at the time she was a deputy state's attorney working for you, TJ Donovan, and she had an annual salary of $42,390.
Right.
And this is 6 years ago. Maybe you'd add a little inflation or something. You know, it sounds like what are we up to, 50 now or something? I don't know, but and she had $180,000 in law school loans.
Yep, and she was going down to wait tables on the weekends.
And she was going down, and she told me, you know, Simon Pierce is a nice restaurant down in Queechee, fairly upscale. But she said she was making more money as a waitress than she was as a lawyer for the state of Vermont.
Absolutely.
I was like, yowzer, that's quite an anecdote. That's why I led the story with that anecdote, because...
Sarah is doing a great job as state's attorney. She's a tremendous leader in not only reforming our criminal justice system, but making sure that the criminal justice system works for victims and everybody. But she really epitomizes, I think, that generation that is coming out of law school and really across the board of higher education with just crushing student loan debt.
Yeah.
And you want good people in public service. We have great state employees. The VSEA is an awesome organization. But if you have to make a choice of saying, boy, how am I going to pay my student loans and pay rent and put gas in my car and put food on the table when I want to serve the public, but I can only get $45,000 a year? And the student loan debt, you're absolutely right. It's close to $200,000 for these folks.
Yeah, the whole thing doesn't, it literally doesn't add up. Hey, I just got a text from Vince Aluzzi, who is both a VSEA lobbyist and the Essex County State's Attorney. This is a classic case here. I mean, Vermonters, I know, often work multiple jobs. You know, some of us are a radio talk show host and a part-time editor at VT Digger. This guy here is not only a VSEA lobbyist, but longtime Essex County State's Attorney, the former state senator, of course, Vince Aluzzi. And he says... the union will create greater equity across the state for employees. He recalled one deputy state's attorney who would have been making an additional $25,000 a year if they had received customary state employee pay raises. That's what my earlier question was trying to get at, so I really appreciate this from Mr. Iluzzi. There were just so many inequities in the system, which leads to resentment, which leads to talented people leaving, Iluzzi said. When employees don't feel appreciated, they bring experience and institutional knowledge to the private sector that only hurts the state. So there's another wrinkle in this thing that so they jump over to, I guess, the defense bar. They know all your tricks as prosecutors, right?
Sure.
And another bump in the road for you guys.
Well, Vince is absolutely right. And I do want to give credit to the Department of State's Attorney, and I agree with everything that Vince just said. I mean, there's been a lot of effort to standardize with pay plans in the Department of State's Attorneys. That being said, the union is the next logical step to bring that equality and that parity and to address those inequities that exist among counties. So, speaking of deputy state's attorneys, I don't want to get in trouble because I have to drive to a meeting. So I need to get off, Dave, because I don't want to get prosecuted by one of these guys.
Attorney General T.J. Donovan, be safe out there. Avoid any standing water in the road because you never know when the road's missing underneath it. So,
well, thanks for having me, and congratulations to Steve Howard and VSCA for fighting a good fight and standing up for the working people of this state.
All right. Thanks a lot, T.J. Safe travels. Steve Howard, I hope you can stay with me another 5 or 6
sure.
minutes here because the segment goes that long, and we got to we're going to be going to a break at the bottom of the hour here for some CBS News. But 244-1777, by the way, if anybody has questions for Steve Howard of the VSEA. 1-877-291-8255 is the toll-free number here at WDEV FM and AM in Waterbury. And this is an interesting story to me. I mean, I sort of feel like this has been, you described a 7-year process, Steve, I guess. Various legislative iterations didn't pass on the first couple tries, right?
Right. It goes to show you this is a tough fight. And what I'm really proud of the VSCA for is that for the members, the new members in this department, is that we'll keep fighting and we'll keep fighting until we win. And that's, I think, a sign of a powerful union. And that's a sign of people who are just determined to do what's right. I think it's something that we've become known for in the State House. We're not going to let go of something. If a bill dies, we're going to keep fighting. We're not going to let go at the bargaining table. You may beat us once, but you're not going to beat us again. And so that's a sort of a message that that this victory sends out. So we're going to fight on behalf of these men and women in this department as hard and aggressively as we can.
And your sense of this thing, I mean, when do you expect there to be results for the employees themselves, the victim advocates, the deputy state's attorneys, the admin staff? In other words, is there a calendar here with contract talks coming, or do they automatically get this bump that Vince Luzzi was talking about here, or how's this all going to play out in the coming months and year or whatever?
Right. So what's going to happen now is that the members in these offices and across the state are going to choose a bargaining team. That's going to be a diverse bargaining team. It'll be admin staff. It'll be victim advocates. It'll be attorneys. They're going to create proposals, and they're going to sit down at the table with our Director of Labor Relations, Gary Hoadley, who's probably the best negotiator in the state of Vermont, and they're going to go head-to-head with the management of the department. So you're going to see the members drive this bus. That's how we do it at the VSCA. It's been very successful because these are the men and women on the front lines who really know what's happening in their offices and what really would make their lives better and make the operation smoother.
Any idea what this is expected to cost? I mean, I was just sort of ruffling out math of 110 employees covered. Vince talks about a $25,000 bump in salary. That's about $2.5 million right there. Or
right. Well, Vince is talking about an outlier, but that was after years and years of a fight that was going on between. This is why I call it the forgotten stepchild of state government. There was a fight going on between the executive at the time, the Douglas administration, and this department over who was going to manage the steps, the step increases for these folks. And while they were fighting, there was no step increase.
I see.
So they had to go to a legislative fix, which you know, by just sheer luck, Vince was there to help them. Mm-hmm. Now they won't have to do that. It won't be sheer luck anymore. They'll be doing things. They'll be driving the bus both at the bargaining table and in the legislature. It's no longer going to be sort of hit or miss the way the situation that Vince talks about. I don't think anybody's really holding out hope for a $25,000 increase for every state's attorney. That was an outlier that was corrected. But they do deserve fair pay, and they do deserve decent caseload caps, and they do deserve just cause protection. And there's a myriad of proposals that they will bring to the table, and the VSEA staff and the other VSEA members across the state will be there to support them.
Another longtime Vermont attorney, well-esteemed and as somebody with experience in the Attorney General's office and elsewhere in state government, Robert Appel. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, Robert.
Well, interesting conversation. My last act as Defender General was signing the collective bargaining agreement for that new unit in 2001. So, Steve, help me. My understanding is that attorneys, assistant AGs, and deputies are still exempt employees, and they don't have just cause protection. The Defender General bargaining unit was made up of admins and investigators. Is that still the case?
That's still the case. And in this case, attorneys won't be able to get just cause protection, but right. The admin staff and the victim advocates can bargain for it in the same way that they did in the Defender General's unit. But you know, those attorneys with those massive caseloads in the Defender General's office may want to look at the VSEA as another place to go for fairness and for decent management of their caseloads, too. We'll see how it goes. But
yeah, I don't know who established the bargaining unit back then. VSEA brought the petition, and I don't know why the line staff, public defenders, were not included. Is that something that went through the labor board, or do we remember?
You know, I wasn't there then, and I don't know. But I do think that the success of our work at this in the states, the Office of State's Attorneys across the state, will have a ripple effect throughout state government and throughout the state. You know, we need to build a stronger and growing labor movement here.
Absolutely.
And if we don't, you know, Vermont's just going to become a playground for the rich, and that's what labor stands between.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, I see that working people are not getting a fair shake, and I take my hat off to VSEA's leadership and its members in doing what it does every day to look out for people who are doing the line work that serves us all. So thanks, Steve, and thanks to your folks.
Well, I thank you for the call, Robert. Informative stuff there, and quite a history, I must say. As it happens, that's going to have to about wrap up this segment on this topic here this morning. We need to move on to our next thing. But Steve Howard of the VSEA, I want to thank you very much for joining me this morning. I want to thank the Attorney General T.J. Donovan again and the surprise guest, Robert Appel, who came in for a few minutes there at the coda of this little symphony, I guess, here. Hey, we are going to take little time for some sponsors here at the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to be back with someone from Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice in a couple of minutes.
Spring. Long awaited, much celebrated. Upstairs at the almost world-famous Warren store, you will find colorful clothing for men, women, and children, bowls, mugs, candles, cards, and gift wrap, puzzles, toys, and games, jewelry, CBD products, local soaps, and more. Best one-stop shopping in Vermont, according to Yankee Magazine. Come for lunch on our deck and enjoy a fun, funky, and friendly world-class shopping experience in the beautiful Mad River Valley. Warren's store in Warren Village, Vermont, open 9 to 6 every day.
It's the Dave Graham Show. Be a part of the show by calling locally at 244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Now back to Dave on WDEV FM and AM.
Also wanted to mention our podcast. There are many, many times that I know when people are busy between 9 and 11 a.m. when we are live on the air here at the Waterbury studio of WDEV FM and AM. But you can listen to the show any time of day or night now, thanks to the internet. You just find the station's homepage at WDEVradio.com. Follow the link from there to the Dave Graham Show. Scroll down a bit, and you will find a list of our recent programs by topic and guest. You can listen to your heart's content any time of day or night. You can't call us at 3 in the morning, but you can listen and get caught up with what's been going on here on the Dave Graham Show. And it's a great way to stay current with what we're doing here. And by the way, we want to thank the Warren Store, the friendly, funky, and almost world-famous Warren Store, for their sponsorship of our podcast. All right. I want to introduce my next guest. Diana Moore is the bereavement coordinator at Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice. And Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice is starting what sounds like an interesting thing this week. There's going to be a series of meetings or, I guess, support group meetings, you might call it, in what called Healing Rhythms. And the object here is to have people work through times of grief with drumming and get that musical expression out there and help them to heal from their grief. And Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice, I just want to say my wife actually worked there for a while as a visiting nurse, and it's a terrific organization. And I know one of the things they do besides visiting nursing is they have the, obviously by their name, the hospice part of their name indicates they work with people who are getting ready to exit this world, and they work with their families. And there's a lot of important and very sensitive work that goes on there. And I just commend anybody who is able and willing to do this day after day, including my guest, Diana Moore. Diana, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
You're welcome.
And tell us about this. Have you had this series of sessions before at CVHH&H?
We started it last year.
Oh, really?
Okay. Last summer.
Uh-huh. And so how often does the new one get underway?
It'll meet once a month, and it'll mm-hmm. start April 23rd, so it'll be next Tuesday.
I see. So you've had one series already, and then this will be the second one, I gather.
Yes.
Okay. And in the first one, how many people typically came to the sessions?
Well, we had anywhere between 3 and 6, typically. It's a small group.
Mm-hmm. And are they what types of drums are being used here?
So I co-facilitate the group with Pat Lambden, who's mm-hmm. a music therapist, and he brings a variety of really nice drums, and I bring some as well. So we have a combination, some djembes, some bowl drums, some kids' drums. Hmm. We also have some rattles and other percussion instruments.
Yep. And is it a situation where maybe Pat is, as the music person really here, would kind of set up a rhythmic pattern or something for people to follow, and then tell me how the class unfolds.
So it's looser than that. It is a support group for mm-hmm. those who are grieving, and I invite all the hospice family members who are interested to try it out, and community members are welcome as well. So we start off with just a brief check-in, what brought people there mm-hmm. to that particular evening. And then we just sort of loosely introduce ourselves to the instrument, to get used to it, comfortable with it, without the expectation of creating music, but more like just to see how it feels, to touch it, because a lot of people who come don't have a musical background, and we're not asking for that. It's it's a process for grieving rather than creating music.
Although I would imagine somebody with a musical background, I mean, imagine somebody who actually had played the drums at some point in their life having an extra, dose of joy out of this. Or, I mean, anybody so far in the classes have a special talent?
Yeah, we've had a couple people that are more musically inclined and they're more comfortable with the drum.
Yeah.
So we set it up, to have that loose introduction, and then we check in with people to give a little bit of sharing time, and then we ask, we do a guided process to check in with where you are in your heart today or in this moment, mm-hmm. and maybe to channel that feeling into the instrument. Because the drum helps to ground our feelings and helps us center in our feelings. That's the purpose behind it. And the vibration of the drum helps to release some of the energy of grief and channel it elsewhere.
You know, I actually played in band in high school and college and stuff, and I wasn't a drummer, but I remember there being moments of say a funeral type of march, or if you were coming into the cemetery on Memorial Day or whatever. Frequently, the drums had a special rhythm that they would play, this sort of a doom 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 like that. And I wondered whether, I mean, there must be some ancient connection here. And you think about in Native American cultures, a lot of times when someone dies and an elder dies, there's a whole ceremony involving a lot of drumming and so on. So this is not a new thing to connect death and drumming.
Right. It's many indigenous cultures have used drumming for all kinds of life transitions and healing. And so we're sort of drawing on what probably comes innately that we've maybe forgotten about.
Listeners, 244-1777 is the call-in number, the local call-in number here in Waterbury. The toll-free number is 1-877-291-8255. I'm wondering if any folks out there have worked their own way through grief or through other troubles in life with the help of music and with the help of actually playing music or performing a little bit yourself, even if you are not a highly trained, accomplished instrumentalist, perhaps you figured out a way to make music work for you and enable yourself to have some emotional recovery and so on. It seems like a really terrific part of life. And when people are, life always ends. That's part of its definition. And when that happens, those who will remain oftentimes have special musical events and rituals going on. You think of the old jazz bands in New Orleans when they played a funeral. You know, it would be nearer thy God to thee. I think it was called, or the saints go marching in, and this kind of as they exited the cemetery, and the so I just wonder, you know, what are your experiences, listeners, in terms of the connection between music and a loved one leaving this world. It's a difficult time of life for sure, and one which will eventually happen to everybody. So it is not. I think too often we most of us go through our daily lives trying not to think about death. But and I want to talk a little bit more broadly with you, Diana Moore. You know, because you in your work, I mean, first off. Again, I really commend your work because it can't be easy every day to go in and know that you're going to be dealing with this issue day in and day out. How do you get through that, first off? Is that tough for you yourself?
No, not really. It's an honor to accompany people through this process, which you have said is part of life. Everybody is going to die at some point in time, and it's important that we find a way to embrace that instead of hide from it. It makes that process a lot more approachable. So for all of the team members that I work with, it's really an honor to be present and help people through this process. We have a beautiful support team with the hospice program, the social workers, nurses, chaplain, volunteers.
Tell me, in the hospice team, is the bulk of the work working with the person who's dying themselves, or is it working with the survivors, or is it really a 50-50 balance between the two?
It's all of that. And the nurses, of course, are going to work with the person who's dying, and the social worker, too, works with the person who's dying and the family members. There's a lot of support for family members. And then my job as bereavement coordinator is to come in and work with the family after that person has died, primarily. Mm-hmm.
I see. And the tell me about sort of eligibility, or is any resident of your catchment area, which I gather is, what, Washington County?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody in Washington County able to take advantage of these services?
Yes, open to anybody.
Wow, and what about costs? Is it an expensive thing, or is it how does that work?
I'm not the best person to ask that question, but there are insurances that cover. But it's open to anybody, regardless of whether or not they can
ability to pay.
Something will happen, and that's what our social workers magically do.
All right. You got to have that social worker magic on the scene sometimes. We have a caller, Dan from Essex. Good morning, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Great. This is an interesting topic because I just had a friend recently pass from cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed as if people were avoiding the conversation and avoiding the person as a whole. You know, they're being kind and they're tiptoeing around, you know, their conversations with them. But I just put it out there. I started sharing with them some books on stoicism and understanding death and life and things like that. And
yeah.
It really came to grips with him about, you know, we all pass.
Yep.
Sometimes it's sooner than others, but not to regret it. But what can you do in your last days to be at peace? And what can other people do to help put you at peace? So I was glad that I was able to call him. We were able to laugh, able to talk about death as it comes and, you know, what his legacy could potentially be with his children. Do they do that kind of training as well with not just the people that are in their care, but with the families to encourage them to be more stoic about it and, you know, respecting it in greater detail, but also embracing it as a whole.
Diana, what about that?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if stoic is the word I would use, but we companion people. We teach people how to be present and encourage mm-hmm. them to be present, as you have sort of described it that way, just to be with them, talk with them, mm-hmm. ask them what, you know, if there's anything they feel like they haven't finished yet or anything that anybody they'd like to talk with or anything they'd like to share before they go. Yeah, it's about being present.
I think it's very important, and I think it's, you know, it's very admirable what you do because I think it's often people avoid the topic or avoid, you know, the person who's in need of these, you know, these loving last minutes, if you will.
Well, Dan, thank you for the call. You raised some interesting points there. We are going to take a brief break here. Here's some words from our sponsors on the Dave Graham Show. Back more with Diana Moore of Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice in just a couple of minutes.
Sale, sale, sale. The word for April upstairs at the Warren store is sale. No joke. Fall winter clothing is 50% off, and last spring summer apparel is up to 75% off. Something for everyone at prices that cannot be beat. Outerwear, sweaters, dresses, pants, priced to sell. New spring merchandise arriving daily. We have to make room. Come on down to Warren Village to the almost world-famous Warren store. Have lunch in our Rockin' Deli and shop upstairs. Best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Fun, funky, and friendly.
Listen to The Dave Graham Show on your time at WDEVradio.com. Click on the program tab, then Dave Graham Show, to listen to the podcast of past shows. Now back to Dave live on WDEV-FM and AM.
Continuing our conversation with Diana Moore, the bereavement coordinator at Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice, and we're talking about a series of workshops starting this Thursday, sponsored by Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice. The Tuesdays. Wow, I guess I got the date wrong. So it starts tomorrow, is that right, Diana?
Next week.
Next week, okay. The sessions start a week from tomorrow, Tuesday, and they are called Healing Rhythms, and they basically help people work through grief with a process involving drumming. And Diana Moore, we were talking a little bit during the break about some research you've seen indicating that drumming actually does have some particularly important healing effects. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, actually. The research has been done to show that it boosts the immune system, thus the activity of drumming, and creates a sense of connectedness with other people.
And that is, those are both important things for people who are going through these processes of, you know, perhaps you have been in a situation where you're in a hospital environment for a while, visiting with and just staying with a person who's now just passed. And hospitals actually, it's sort of a joking thing I say to people sometimes, but I sometimes have said, if you want to stay healthy, stay out of hospitals, because there are these things called nosocomial infections. And the hospitals obviously try to keep a tight lid on that happening, but people are sick in the hospital, and illnesses, if you're not really, really careful, which I know most hospitals try to be, but still, human things happen, natural things happen, and people get sick. That's one of the sad facts of life. But and in terms of the bereavement following the death of a loved one, and the idea that that drumming will help. That's fascinating to me that you talk about connectedness here, because I could see in a situation where you might be using a drum and you have a partner or a friend or someone or maybe even a group of people sitting around you also drumming, and you can maybe have a little session, you know, mm-hmm. almost a jam session, percussion jam session or something. And there's a lot of joy in that, folks. You know, I don't know how many listeners out there have ever participated in music at all, played an instrument or whatever, but I've had a little of that kind of experience in my life, and I'll tell you, the sense of doing something, no pun intended, in concert with other people, you know, in together, it really, really adds a layer of joy that is, I think, really important and healing in life. And that's why I always urge friends with kids or whatever, you know, hey, think about your kid maybe wanting to try an instrument, because it's a great part of life. It really is. So, and here's an opportunity to, you know, get a little musical expression out, even if you've never played an instrument. Go and learn how to just, you know, follow a beat maybe and actually join in other people doing that as well.
Well, interestingly, a lot of the times we're not in sync.
Really?
And it's so, and that's okay. It's it's about us tuning into that instrument on our own. And sometimes naturally we become in sync after mm-hmm. we've played through that hour or so. By the end of the hour, a lot of the times we are in sync, but we don't always start out that way.
Yeah, that's a fascinating process in itself. If in fact, just sort of as a natural relating to one another, the different people in the room start to, you know, somebody's playing the downbeats and somebody's playing the offbeats, and next thing you know, you do have a little more, as you said, idea of being in sync going on, which is that sounds like a beautiful thing if it works out that way.
It is a beautiful thing, and everybody who's participated has left feeling better than when they came in the room.
Everybody. That's a thousand. That's a batting average of 1,000.
That's,
I guess,
pretty good. Yeah,
that is awesome. And you mentioned Pat Lambden mm-hmm. as a music therapist who is. Who co-leads these mm-hmm. sessions with you, mm-hmm. and is Pat local, or does he come from away somewhere, or where's he located?
He's local, and he does some contracted work through Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice, primarily working with children.
I see. Does he work with schools too, and that sort of thing?
I'm
or
not sure right now if he does.
I asked about getting Pat on the show here, and maybe he'd bring a drum and do a little demonstration, but he was out of town today, so we weren't able to work that out. But it sounds like a really kind of a cool thing, and something that this organization, of course, you know, CVHHNH, is doing a lot of cool things in our community, and because one of the things that. That you have to remember, folks, and I know it's an awfully nice thing to put out of your mind, but these folks are dealing every day with people who are ill or infirm, and or people who are dying or have just died, or have loved ones who just died, and as I said, these things are all part of life. And Diana Moore, I just want to ask you, what do you think overall of the way society kind of deals with this stuff? I mean, what do we need to do?
We live in a culture that really denies aging and death. And I think what we need to do is come back to reality and just, like I said before, try to embrace that aspect of life, that we are going to age and we are going to die. And mm-hmm. how can we do it more gracefully? How can we support each other instead of running from each other?
You know, one of the things I can get a little cynical sometimes, and I've been known to say that healthcare, for all the billions of dollars we spend on it, in our, you know, it's a fifth of our economy, I understand, here in Vermont, but sometimes I wonder what we're chasing here, because it always fails in the end. I mean, it, you know, it basically it can't not. And But I don't know what you do to create any kind of an alternative to this idea that I'm going to have another treatment and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And you know, damn the torpedoes and the expense, I'm going to just do this because I'm going to maybe buy myself another few weeks of life or something.
I think that's actually the beauty of hospice. When the doctor says you have maybe 6 months to live, it doesn't mean the calendar is done after 6 months. People often live longer than that on hospice because they're able to be at home and they're able to be comfortable. And that's the whole process with hospice, is supporting that person when they're reaching the end of life. It's a beautiful program.
Yeah, that is a very important thing. Now, does hospice work in an institutional setting, at a nursing home or hospital as well? Or
yes.
Is it really... Okay, so yes. It could be folks. I mean, obviously, it sounds like the ideal situation is somebody who's back at home with family and loved ones, friends around, and so on and so forth. And then the last thing I wanted to mention, we are coming up to the end of the segment here at the top of the hour, but the thing that Dan mentioned about being present for a friend or a loved one who's dying, do you share that message, Diana Moore, of don't hide it?
Yeah. Why hide it? It is uncomfortable for a lot of people. I understand that.
Yep.
But it's a beautiful deepening of a relationship if you can be present with somebody who's dying.
Yeah. Well, that is about it for this segment of the Dave Graham Show here on WDEV FM and AM. I want to thank Diana Moore of Central Mount Home Health and Hospice for coming and joining me this morning. Diana, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we're going to go to top of the hour CBS News. And it's some red... No news? Okay, we're going right to the Red Sox pregame show then. We'll be back tomorrow, folks.